Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of The Winning Drive. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, joined by Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel, and also joined by the coach. You know he is former high school football coach at Rotan, Belton, Brownwood, Capel, Burnett, also college football player at Abilene Christian, coached there as well, coached at Texas, five different seasons, had numerous roles and responsibilities. Now you can catch his great work over at, boom, check that out. Coach Bob Shipley, what's going on, Coach? How you doing?
Hey, man, just thankful for all this rain we've been getting out in West Texas, baby.
Hey, we're getting it here too, Coach. I'm thankful to my yard needs it, man. I'm trying to get that yard of the month club, and it ain't working out really well, but I need some of that rain. It's going to be pretty good. CJ, wherever you are, it looks green. It looks green out there. It looks overcast, but it's green at least.
I'm expecting some rain later today. I'm out in Waco, so anybody that's up in the University High area, come say hello. Hopefully this rain holds off. I'm about to go catch a practice here in a bit. But, yeah, it looks really green, actually. I hope that field that they're playing on is just as nice.
All right, my man CJ, he's dedicated, folks, so he's out there on the road. We'll get some updates exactly where he's going, who he's looking at, who he's looked at, because I know he actually made the trip from his up in Dallas with his people hanging out. By the way, happy belated Mother's Day. Hope everybody had a great Mother's Day weekend hanging out with the family. That's what it's all about. But I know my man CJ on his way back. I know you were planning on hitting up some spots, looking at some players, trying to get eyes on guys. That's why we love having CJ here. He's dedicated to it. All your questions, comments, please get them up there. Super chats. Always jump to the front of the line. You can interrupt the show whenever you want to with a super chat. We appreciate you guys, of course, making this a family, a community. We'll get to as many of your questions as we can. I promise you that. We actually got a lot of random topics that I want to get to, especially while we got my man CJ here. We'll get into some of those. Transfer portal departures, at least for now, some of the numbers about what schools have had the most transfer portal departures. Those numbers are out there. We'll get into that a little bit. Also, the ranking of college football facilities. There's a nice list from 247 Sports out there. College football win totals. We'll get to that. And actually, there's a conversation about the Aggies that we need to have too, based on some of the preseason Vegas totals from DraftKings and other sites. So we'll get to that too coming up. Are we underestimating the Aggies? I never will, because I once played the Aggies, and hey, I once lost to the Aggies, so I'll never underestimate the Aggies, but I wonder if Longhorn Nation is as a whole, because it's been a while. Also, Bill Connolly has his returning production rankings out. We'll look at where the Longhorns stand there as well. So we got a lot of random topics we'll throw out there. But, of course, your topics are our main priority. So, please, whatever you want to talk about, just get it out there. We'll get to our fantastic sponsor of the show. Just let me mention Allegiant. They are our primary sponsor for the Winning Drive today. We appreciate their support. And I'll tell you a little bit more about Allegiant and why you need to reach out to them a little bit later on. We'll do that. All right. Let's get to the first topic that I want to bring up here, guys. There are some Circa Sports has their college football win totals out. And I sent this to you guys. Their regular season win totals are already out. And I just want to throw it where they have Texas here. They have Texas at 10.5 wins with their win total overall. They don't have a lot of teams with double digit wins on here. They got Penn State with 10. Oregon with 10.5. They got Ohio State with 10.5. Notre Dame has 10 on here as well. Georgia has 10. Of course, Georgia's in that category. I believe that's it from what I can see. My eyes are old, so I might have missed one. But I believe that's it in terms of the teams that are predicted by Circa Sports to have these double-digit wins. All right, guys, they have Texas. How about this, though? I want to get this because they have Texas A&M at 8.5 wins. They got them right by Texas, so they want you to talk Texas A&M a little bit. They got Texas A&M at 8.5 wins. I'll start with the rivals. I'll look up Oklahoma here in a second. Oklahoma's at 7.5 wins. For the rivals of the Longhorns, Coach, 8.5 for the Aggies, 7.5 for the Sooners. Over, under. What do you think? Too high, too low?
I'm gonna go over on OU. I think maybe by one win. I'm not sure. A&M. Who knows what's going on over there? They've always got the hype train going in College Station. That's for sure. You know, but but realistically, you know, I read a deal, you know, could A&M and Texas both be undefeated when they play in 24? You know, I don't know with the staff change and the turnover they've had there. I think it's going to be really hard for them to, you know, to go, not only to go to our game undefeated, but to be at 8.5 wins. It's certainly possible. And I don't underrate them either. Like you, Rod, I'm not going to underestimate these guys.
No, man.
But you want to try to be realistic, you know, within. So I don't know. What do you think, CJ?
It's interesting. Oklahoma's replacing all five of their offensive linemen. They'll have a first-year starting quarterback. They've returned a lot on the defensive side of the ball. And I at least think they have a really, really talented wide receiving group. They didn't have a strong running game a year ago. And now you're starting to wonder, how does that offensive side of the ball complement itself there? Because we saw it a year ago where the offense didn't complement the defense in its entirety. You know, they ran too quickly. They left the defense on the field too often. Texas sometimes had that issue a little bit in Sarkisian's first 2 years, where it felt like in the second half of games, you go three and out a few times in a row and your defense is all of a sudden playing 90 to 100 plays a game. And you sit there wondering, why are they, you know, allowing so many big time plays and yards and points in the second half of games? Well, it's because they're exhausted. And that's exactly what happened a year ago. Jeff Lebby, the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma, just took the Mississippi State head coaching job. So Texas will see him the first week of SEC play, but they just went out and hired someone with a very similar style of offense. So philosophically, Oklahoma will be looking very similar what they had last year offensively. It's going to be, you know, the deep shots will be there. They're going to go fast. Brent Venables loves tempo, but I don't think it suits what he likes to do defensively. I think you need to offset that a little bit. And if you don't have a running game and you don't have an offensive line, you have a new quarterback, good chances are you're not going to be able to hold on to football and own that time of possession, especially in the SEC. So I see them struggling a little bit at first. Again, I do think that they'll figure it out. They have too many veteran pieces defensively to be a bad team in my eyes. But I do wonder if they slip up a couple times like we saw a year ago against Kansas, Iowa State. So we'll see. A&M, on the other hand, I think they added a lot of good pieces out of the portal. Nick Scowerton's a first-round guy, edge from Purdue. They just added another one, Cicery from UCF on the edges. Whether or not he's a first or second string guy, he can get after the quarterback and make some plays. And, of course, they added the Pitt linebacker, who next to Torian York provides a pretty solid front seven. So I like what they've done defensively. Will they be able to protect the quarterback and have consistent quarterback play? They're similar boat as Oklahoma. So I like A&M to kind of stumble a little bit towards the back half of the year.
Yeah, I mean, and to the point that Coach was making, I'll say DraftKings. DraftKings only has the Aggies, and Aggies are actually have discussed this. I've actually seen a couple of Aggie sites discuss this. They only have the Aggies as an underdog in one game, and that's the Texas game. They got them favored basically at every game, which is kind of strange. They got them basically favored, and even at Notre Dame game to start off, they have them favored by one, I believe, the Notre Dame game early on.
So that surprises me a little bit. Notre Dame's going to have some talent in the trenches. We know that to be the case for as long as Notre Dame has been around, right? Well, now they have a very versatile quarterback. Riley Leonard can go with his legs. He's not a Sam Hartman. I know he had a good year last year, kind of faded the second half. But Riley Leonard, when healthy, that guy can get some yardage with his legs. And I think he's going to end up I think he's going to end up being a first or a day two pick in the 2025 draft. He can play some ball.
Yeah. But to the point that Coach was making, I know, obviously, I'm not saying it's going to happen. But what if, you know, the Aggies have won double digit games by the time the Longhorns play them? Because I think we all agree Longhorns are going to be really, really good. That game could be, I mean, it's already going to be a huge game. Could be even bigger if the Aggies are actually good. And I'm just some of these preseason win totals and some of these preseason Vegas totals are saying the Aggies are going to be, you know, around an 8.5, could be even a 9-win team. As if they overachieve, then you're talking about them being a 10-win team. That's asking a lot of a first year coach, but we shall see. That that game could be even bigger than we expect it to be if the Aggies are actually good. That is a whole different discussion. All right, I want to get you guys' thoughts about there's an article out from 247 that has all of the schools so far, because we know the transfer portal, you know, acquisitions are still going on, but they've slowed down at this point. Teams are starting to fill up, the Longhorns starting to fill up their rosters. So they have a ranking of the teams with the most transfer portal departures so far in 2023. Colorado, and this is from 2023, the season. So I believe this is two transfer portal cycles. I believe it's the winter and also the spring. So they've combined them. Colorado got 41 transfer portal departures for Colorado. They got 38 coming in. I already locked in for the 2024 season, but they had 41 total. That's a different monster altogether. Indiana's got 39, according to this article. Michigan State also with 39, and Alabama with 39, which makes sense because of Nick Saban's departure and them bringing in Alex DeBoer. They also have here the Houston Cougars. The Houston Cougars with 33, and the Cincinnati Bearcats with 32. Yellow Jackets, Georgia Tech, 32 as well. Arkansas's got 31. The Aggies also with 31. Makes sense with the Jimbo Fisher departure. And the Louisville Cardinals with 30. You know, Texas ended up on the winning end of those. Arizona with a lot of guys leaving. Texas knows that because they got a couple of Arizona guys. 29 from Arizona leaving there. From Arizona, Arizona State. The Longhorns actually went to Arizona State. They are also 11th with 29. And then USC's got 29 here as well on this list. Washington, they're also with 29. So they're right around top 10. The Longhorns, except healthy attrition here for the Longhorns. The Longhorns are at 24. That puts them 27th. They're tied with Georgia for 27th on this list. And like I said, everybody deals with attrition. If you lose a coach, you're going to deal with more attrition. That's just the nature of the beast. That's the trend. But the guys alone who have lost, the latest being Terrence Brooks, who end up going to Illinois. I believe now, and let me know if I'm off here, CJ, the number of players out of the 24, it says here, that Texas had departed in the winter and the spring portals. Is it 11 of them that are transferring to Power 5 programs? Is it some? I believe the number is plays 11. I believe it's 11 that I counted, but I could be off. What do you have a count on it officially?
Yeah, I'm finding it. I have it at 9.
You have it at 9. Okay.
I have it at 9, but I might not have updated it as recently. I believe the number is closer to 11. Of course, they had 13 enter from the spring or from the winter portal to get to 24. That number, that would mean 11. So I'll have to go update that now. Of course, Rod, when you look at it, you know, Texas has, I would say, fared relatively well in the portal so far this offseason. Of course, they've gone out, they've addressed needs with additions. I wouldn't say they've been hit too heavily in the terms of their depth perspective. Of course, Terrence Brooks was probably the one surprise. His departure did leave Texas in an immediate hole at the cornerback spot. But nowhere else would I say there's been departures from this roster from a year ago that leads you to, you know, almost immediately having to go out and address it right away.
I agree. I think cornerback is probably that one position, and they went out and addressed corner as soon as Terrence Brooks left. But I just wanted to bring up because it's now people can keep up with this kind of stuff. It's just a healthy – I mean, everybody's losing guys. I mean, Georgia's at 24 and Texas at 24. I know it sounds crazy, but that's about – I bet that's around the average number for a Power 5 university coach. These are just kind of this new thing, kind of the turnover that naturally happens. Like I said, there'll be more of it if there's turmoil within your program, if there's your coaching, you know, departure or coaching, a firing. Of course, there's going to be more. But for the most part, now we're dealing with an average. Everybody's going to be, you know, 20, 25 guys leaving pretty much per year via the transfer portal. And you're probably going to be bringing in something around, I don't know, 20-something guys. That's just – the new norm in college football.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you look at the fact that by the time you count in Colorado seniors that graduated, you know, you're talking about half the roster. A turnover. And it'd be interesting to go back and see before the transfer portal what the average was. What would you say, 10, 8 to 10 maybe?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know if he even got to double digits before the portal. Yeah, like,
I know.
You're right. And the portal really, I mean, it really was. I mean, and that, by the way, it was good because it gave the players more freedom of movement. But really, it was not just the portal. It was the post-COVID portal. The portal was different. The post-COVID portal, remember, gave everybody extra year of eligibility.
Yeah.
And then they basically decided, the NCAA decided they were not going to penalize multiple-time transfers. But basically, they were going to decide, you know, hey, laissez-faire, you can transfer whenever you want to, how many times you want to. That also, so that's only been what, the last three transfer portals? That post-COVID, where basically the NCAA decided, now it's actually a rule on the books. You can transfer as much as you want to as long as you meet certain academic requirements. But at first, it still was the old rule where you had to sit out a year if you transfer multiple times without a waiver. But the NCAA decided they weren't going to enforce the rule because they were losing too much in court trying to enforce those rules. Yeah. I think it's actually last two or three years where it's really just, it's got crazy. It's gotten wild. It's even hard to keep up with how many, like your own team, you're like, oh, that guy left. Where'd he go? I mean, you used to be able to keep up with it because, you know, there were, like you said, 10 guys or so. Now you're going to have 20, 30 guys leave and enter your program every year. And that's not including the guys that exhaust eligibility and the guys that go to the NFL draft early. Man, you're talking about every year you're going to have easily between guys graduating, transfer portal, exhausted eligibility, NFL draft, easily. I think every team's going to be dealing with damn near 30 to 35 to 40% of the crazy of their roster just naturally turning over season to season.
It's kind of crazy. And I mean, Colorado alone had 41 of the 85 scholarship players enter the portal, you know, and that's not even accounting for anybody that went to the draft or is no longer being able to play football because of eligibility.
Yeah.
It's interesting amongst that group as well. When you take a look at it, who in the top five had coaching changes? You know, Alabama did. Indiana has a new coach from James Madison who basically just brought over the entire Duke squad to Indiana with them. Kurt Cignetti, great coach. I'm excited to see what they end up doing. But Michigan State had some coaching change early last year. They also had some really interesting NIL situation that kind of, you know, allowed that door to open up for a number of big-time players on that team. But Colorado, sticking with Deion Sanders and everything that goes in with Deion, still seeing over 40 departures via the portal. I don't know. It's tough to defend at that point because, you know, you can't say it's a brand new coach. It's not the guys I recruited. For the most part, Deion got all of his team from the portal. So, you know, if this is the spot that we're going to continue to see the Buffaloes and Colorado in year to year, throw out any game planning, any tape, any schemes that you think you might have from a year ago because it's going to be a brand new team basically every year now.
That's a great point, too. I didn't think about it. Yeah, they got a new OC, too, I believe, there in Colorado, speaking of the Buffaloes. Yeah, it's just I thought those numbers were – and some of them are actually jarring, but, yeah, I think it's the new norm. For most programs, you're going to have between, you know, 20 and 25 guys leaving your program if it's healthy attrition, and that's a healthy amount of nutrition year to year. Okay, something else, guys, I wanted to get to. I don't know if you guys saw the video of A.D. Mitchell. Choke coach, this is awesome. I don't know if you saw the video, but he chose the number 10 playing for the Colts. And he said the reason he chose number 10 is because there were 10 receivers drafted ahead of him. You want to always remember them 10 receivers drafted ahead of him as motivation, the chip on the shoulder. What are your thoughts, Coach, about A.D. Mitchell going 10 to make sure he remembers them 10 guys that went ahead of him that he didn't think were better than him? Not all 10 anyway.
Yeah, you know exactly how I feel about that. I love guys, whether it's real or imagined, that have a chip on their shoulder. I love it. It's motivation, man. It's stuff that gets your butt out of bed in the off season and gets you going to prove people that you're better than what their actions have shown the way they feel about you, they overlook you. Mm-hmm. And so any chip on your shoulder, like I said, real or imagined, I always go back to Waterboy, you know, the movie Waterboy, you know, you know, we laugh about that, but I mean, back in my day, there were a lot of guys that thought crazy stuff like that to get them fired up and going, you know? So I love it. I think it's great. I think it shows that he's a stinking competitor and he thinks he's the best available player probably in the draft. And he's going to start off his career with a big chip on his shoulder and a lot to prove.
Yeah. By AD Mitchell stock, I heard Greg Cosell say that he believes, you know, Greg Cosell, NFL films, watch a lot of it. He says that he believes he's got top 10 traits to be a top 10 receiver in the league. Be up to AD Mitchell if he can reach that kind of ceiling, but that's a hell of a compliment there, throwing it out.
He's going to a great situation too. You know, when you think about it, young quarterback, they have invested in the offensive line. He's going to be pinned in as a wide receiver two across from Michael Pittman, who is drawing a lot of, you know, attention from defenses already. He won't be forced to be that guy defenses key in on like an Xavier Worthy. You know, Pittman is a guy that they're going to sign for a very long time. He put up a big season a year ago. Right now, he is the guy, whereas AD Mitchell can kind of, you know, kind of see that single high coverage at times or that one-on-one and make hay that way. So really, really encouraging situation for AD Mitchell, his rookie campaign. And I'm sure, you know, Indianapolis is thrilled to, you know, pair him and Pittman up together with a young quarterback.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I can't wait to see him. He's already got some highlights on social media, making some plays already. And I'm excited for AD Mitchell. As a Texans fan, I'm not excited because I got to see him twice a year. But as a Longhorn fan, I'm excited for him. All right, before we get back to it, we'll get some of the questions here as well. Before we get back to it, let me thank our wonderful sponsor. Really excited for our wonderful sponsor, Allegiant. We want to thank them for jumping on board. Did you know that among the top 9 challenges business owners face, the most difficult ones include finding customers, increasing brand awareness, digital advertising, and lead generation? What if I told you, what if I could point you to a local homegrown agency here in Austin that could solve those problems for your business once and for all? All right, for over 25 years, Allegiant Digital Marketing founder and CEO Chad Markham and a UT grad, of course, and instructor of the Digital Marketing Bootcamp here at UT in Austin has helped thousands of businesses and business owners overcome these challenges, take advantage of their Hook 'em Horn special, and save up to $2,500 in advertising. Visit AllegiantDigital.com/OnTexasFootball. That's AllegiantDigital.com/OnTexasFootball to learn more today. Thank you to Allegiant Digital. And also thank you to Chad Markham. We really appreciate all of their support and them sponsoring the winning drive here on Texas Football. All right, E. Kim has a question for CJ and I, but probably mostly for CJ here because CJ's always on the grind out there in the recruiting realm. Plus or over-under, basically. He wants to know 2.5 over-under Texas taking defensive backs in that 2025 class.
This is a really good question, and this is a good year for Houston in the defensive back class as well. Right now, Jonah Williams is the big name out of that area. I know he's more in Galveston, but for the sake of this conversation, he is the big fish out in that area. Right now, I think it's between Oklahoma and Texas A&M at the moment. We'll see exactly where that goes, but I think Texas is in a good spot for Cade Phillips. Of course, Dorian Brew is someone that Texas had on campus late in the spring, and he's going to be coming in June 14th or 16th. And then Caleb Chester. What does Texas end up doing with that cornerback situation? Do they continue to push for Aiden Anding, who I think they're in a good spot for? They're at least in the top three, at the very least, for the Ruston, Louisiana cornerback out of that the 2025 class. So those are your three you're looking at: Cade Phillips, Dorian Brew, Caleb Chester. I'll be interested to see. Right now I see at least two, but I think it depends on where else Texas starts looking for their defensive backs. Of course, Terry Joseph was at Bastrop actually last Thursday to see Ramontz Adams, the 2025 cornerback currently committed to Texas Tech. He actually just placed silver in the triple jump for the 4A classification. So we'll see if Texas gets involved anywhere else. I'll take the under right now, but it does make sense if Texas goes 3 for 3, obviously, if they'll, you know, continue to hit on that Houston area.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. We just talked about the transfer portal departures. You had 24. Hell, what, 8 of those were DBs? Eight of those were DBs. Six of those were safeties. You're going to have Jahdae Barron leave. You're going to have Makuba leave. Hell, and then you have to account for just transfer portal attrition. One or two other guys may leave from those DBs because you brought in five young DBs. You're probably going to accelerate the development of a couple of those guys, depending on who ends up standing out early and who ends up redshirting. Twos is safe, but hell, man, if Houston area is as talented as you say, and you get the three you like on board, I wouldn't have any problem taking three.
It's one of those things. You never turn away a DB from Louisiana, and Houston's like right there too. Those guys can go. You know, it's almost as safe a bet as like quarterbacks from the big programs. You know, Southlake or Westlake. You know, those guys just Lake Travis in recent years. I mean, those guys just get it right. Duncanville, you take those guys. Houston DBs, they're starting to turn that on as well.
Hey, man, I'm not going to deny that. I'm one of those Houston DBs myself, Coach, so I take a lot of pride in that for sure. Houston got to own something because DFW is pretty much dominating every damn thing these days, every other position, you would say. So I'm glad Houston can claim the DBs at least. all right, guys, I want to get to another list here that Pro Football Focus had that I thought was interesting. Pro Football Focus basically ranked the teams in college football with the most NFL players on rosters. And I'm not going to lie, I was a little surprised. And this is obviously cut down training camp. Just right now, we're talking about right post-draft. That Texas made the top 10. Am I wrong to be surprised by that? CJ, Coach, am I wrong to be surprised by? I thought Texas would be outside the top 10. They made it. Now they're number 10, so it's not like they were firmly entrenched. Alabama's number one with 75 players on NFL rosters. Georgia 62, tied with LSU. Ohio State, Michigan with 59. That's third and fourth, tied for third and fourth. Then there's Notre Dame with 52. Penn State with 48. Washington, that's 44. Clemson with 43. Then Oklahoma and Texas. Coach, Oklahoma and Texas have the same amount of players on NFL rosters. Maybe that's the part that was surprising to me. Because Oklahoma has dominated this conference pretty much in football in the last, since the inception of the conference, let's be honest. Texas has won their fair share, but even in Texas' heyday, Oklahoma was still winning, their fair share, winning at least half of those battles. And I thought Oklahoma would be higher up on the list. So maybe I'm trying. Maybe this is a slap in the face or my way of taking a shot at Oklahoma. But since Texas has been down, Coach, development has been the big issue at Texas, not developing talent. And yet Texas still finds themselves in the top 10. Now, after a really good draft, I guess maybe that's what happened. But Coach, are you surprised by that number like I was?
Yes. Yes. I am because, over the past, 14 years, we hadn't probably been close to that, So yes, I am. But the good thing is we're still trending upwards.
Yes, sir.
We're going to continue to climb this ladder, if everything stays status quo and we continue to get the level of recruits that we have and we continue to have, the continuity in the coaching staff. And, everything keeps trending the way that it is. We're going to keep climbing up. But, I was surprised. I was surprised we had that many in the league. Because, when you're talking about, 2 years ago, we didn't have one guy drafted?
Exactly. It's right. You've had multiple years, with no guy drafted, but years where it's been
scarce. Yeah.
In terms of Texas NFL draftable talent, I guess you did have 11. So I guess prior to this draft, if you'd had a bad draft here, just one or two guys, then you wouldn't be close. But I guess Sark having that record breaking amount of guys drafted, CJ, helped close the gap. But now we're just thinking, looking forward. Like I said, I don't want to start counting the chickens before they're hatched kind of thing here. But man, Texas, if they have a couple of more decent drafts, they're going to catapult themselves, CJ, into the top. Top five, potentially. Quick, fast.
Yeah, I don't think that's too far away, really, if you consider what Texas has been doing. I'm not going to say that they're going to go out and send 11 kids or 10 kids to the NFL draft every year, but we do see Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and some of those big-time programs end up with 8 to 10 on a given season. I don't think Texas is too far away from that. Of course, right now we mentioned, I think the list got up to about 20 guys who are draft eligible on this year's roster who we could see certainly departing for the NFL draft. I think right now at least 14 of them are, you know, seniors or older, if you consider the fifth and the sixth year guys. And then there's five or six guys from the junior class. When you talk about Cam Williams and Ethan Burke and some of those cats, will they depart? We'll see. But of course, when you're in the consideration or having the conversation of what these guys might do at the end of the season, I think that gives you an indication that they're a pretty good football player and also that they have future in the NFL, which is exactly what Texas has not been doing over the last year. UT boy made a good point. You know, we wouldn't be having this conversation, right? If Texas didn't just break a record for its own program with 11, like that's a big step. And again, it's very difficult to continually send off 11 guys to the draft, but it's a good start. I would say it certainly is carrying over into the high school ranks. I was talking to Riley Pettijohn on Friday at his spring game, and he basically answered the question about Texas sending so many guys to the NFL. He's like, yeah, they develop now. That hadn't always been the case, but I see that. That's a place where I could certainly see myself elevating my play to the level in which NFL scouts will be calling my name one day. And again, that hadn't always been the case for the Texas Longhorns. And what's interesting is Oklahoma. I mean, for all those years under Lincoln Riley, you hear about the first overall quarterbacks, the wide receivers putting up big numbers. Bill Beedenball sends multiple guys to the draft every year. But you know what held them back? A lack of development on the defensive side of the ball. And Texas is now developing on both sides, and you're seeing that by, you know, very evidently by the 11 guys taken last month.
Hey, I'll take it even further. I'll say that they're developing in all three phases because I think Keelan Robinson, a lot of that was his returning ability. He was the best return man in the country, arguably, at least in that draft class. And I think that's what got him drafted into the draft. So, yeah, I mean, you're right about that, CJ. The defensive side of the ball for Oklahoma is probably why that number is so low. Because I bet the large percentage of those guys in the league are offensive guys from Oklahoma. And for Texas, I wonder what percentage of Texas guys were undrafted free agents at one point. And I bet that number for Texas is probably a little too high, but that will change over the next 3-4 drafts. Texas with fewer undrafted free agents this season because those guys end up being drafted at the back end of the draft. That's ultimately what you want and ultimately shows you that Texas is developing that talent at a really high rate. Here's a question I have for you. And I saw an article about this over on Longhorn Wire, and I'll give them credit for the conversation. It's Quinn Ewers. He is 8th all time right now in passing yards at Texas. He right now has 5,656, so he's 8th all time. Where does he finish all time when he's done, Coach? Colt McCoy is the leader career in career passing yards, 13,253. Now, he ain't getting there. Sam Mellinger's at 11,436. That's second. Major Applewhite's at his third, 8,353. James Brown is fourth, 7,638. Peter Gardere, Peter the Great, 7,396. And my boy Chris Sims, Deuce Man, Sensation, 7,097. He is sixth. Then you got Vincent Paul Young, 6,040. He's going to pass up VY relatively quickly. I mean, it'll happen in first, before he gets to conference play, he'll pass up VY. Where does he finish, Coach?
Well, that's a really good question. Now, if he stays healthy, and I'm trying to look, I can't remember where's he at, Quinn?
He's eighth. He's
56, yeah.
He's eighth all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I see him you know, if he's healthy, I think he could jump into the top five.
I love that. If he's healthy, the coach had to throw that in there. Had to spoil the. But you're right. That is the big. That's why he only had. That's why he is where he is now, because he's missed how many games?
Here, attention. Yeah. A handful.
Two to three, a really good year. With a really good year, he could jump into the top three. But if I think
that's on the table. 3,500 yards this year is certainly doable, especially when you consider where Texas plans to be at the end of the year, playing 13, 14, potentially 15 games. If that's the case, I'm not that quick at the math, but, you know, if you throw for 275 yards over 14 or 15 games, you're easily in the top three there. Quinn's done that. He averaged 271 a year ago, even with only playing about 2.5 quarters at Houston. We didn't see him necessarily have great games against teams like, you know, Rice, Wyoming at home. Kansas, BYU were a little bit sluggish starts as well. Third-year Quinn Ewers, I think you're going to see him really put pieces together and have that consistency on a week-to-week basis. I think you see at the end of his tenure, so at the end of next year, that list will go Colt McCoy, Sam Ehlinger, and I think you'll see Quinn Ewers right there with the number three next to his name. Fitting, considering that's the jersey he's wearing now, right?
No, you're right. I mean, if he stays – Coach is right. If he stays healthy, let's just say – if he stays healthy, let's say Texas plays – you know, 14 games, if he stays healthy and he averages, like you said, we're at 270 yards, right around there. He's definitely going to be third. But if he misses a lot of time and he misses, you know, three, four games in there, then that he's probably not going to crack the top three. Still will probably finish, like you said, Coach says, in the top five easily, but not in the top three. But my kind of point of the exercise is, where would he be if he had more durability as a player? Think about where he is. Because I didn't expect him to be that high because he hasn't actually played a lot of football. He hadn't played a lot of football. He hadn't finished it. Sorry, didn't finish the season yet. I mean, that if he has that breakout year that we all expect, Quinn just saying he could really, you know, put his name, cement his name in those record books, all-time career passing yards.
I don't think it's going to take a long time before anybody catches, you know, Colt or Vince up at the top of that list. Of course, those are, you know, big time numbers put up by a long duration of guys staying at the same school for a long time. And you just don't see that. Colt and Sam. But I mean, Sam was a 4-year starter. Colt, he left as the winningest college quarterback of all time. So he played a lot of games, right? You don't see that all too often. Of course, Quinn's been injury prone a little bit, but at that same point, you know, he's expected to go to the NFL draft after this year. He's not going to be sticking around for 2 more years. Arch Manning, how long will he be at Texas? I would expect no longer than 2 years as your starting quarterback before NFL teams start to call him as well. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword in the sense that you won't be breaking the school records anytime soon, but you could certainly leave a lasting impression with your play on the field, and certainly entering the NFL is only going to help benefit the Longhorns when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to program kind of perspective on the outside looking in at the Texas Longhorns. If they continue to put out Quinn Ewers, Arch Mannings, we'll see about Trey Owens, but he looked pretty darn good in that spring game. So he could certainly be in this same conversation as well.
Yeah, no, I love me some Trey Owens. You guys know that. I mean, that quarterback from stat is considered. I think it was On Three that's currently doing their position rankings nationally, every position and their rankings. And they got Texas as the best quarterback room in the country. They got him as the second best O-line in the country, third best wide receiver in the room in the country. As a matter of fact, this is actually kind of a natural segue. On Three did their now they're doing defense. And they did D-line plus edges. So it's just an entire D-line. They're not differentiating D tackles and the outside edge guys. They do not have Texas ranked in the top 10 best D lines in the country. Just thought that is not the case. But it got me thinking about this D line and where they should rank. Because CJ, you did a great job, and I don't know exactly you. I'm sure you have the numbers there just in your head. But I remember you tweeting out a stat about the veterans, like the experience now on that D-line now, when you're bringing in Bill Norton, bringing in Sevilla. I mean, these guys are seasoned vets. Now bringing in Lole. That D-line, one thing it's got now is a lot of experience when you start looking across it now. Even on the edges, I think, too, including the edges now with guys like Baron Sorrell now and Ethan Burke who played. You got a lot of experience on that D-line. We're underrating, and I'm not saying they're a top 10 D-line. I'm not even making that argument. I'm saying – overall, I think one of the things that we have not given enough credit for that's going to pay huge dividends to that group and be hugely beneficial is the amount of experience with that group. It's a ton of it.
Yeah, so, yeah, it is a ton. And that's the best place if you're not going to have top-end talent to make game-changing plays, at least have a lot of production, have a lot of experience. And that's kind of the route that we've seen Texas take. Of course, they were in on Dominic Williams. Didn't land him, ended up at Oklahoma, but they went out and added a guy with 1,600 career snaps, had been a 5 or 6 year guy in a college weight room. I know he's battled some injuries, but at the same point, you go back and you look at the Arizona State film, you see, yeah, this guy's got quite a ceiling of, you know, what it takes to be on the field. Of course, last year at Louisville was a bit of a step back in the right direction. Now entering the SEC, he's going to be joining Tia Savea, a senior, fifth-year senior, Bill Norton, you know, six-year senior Bill Norton, and then fifth-year seniors Vernon Broughton and Alfred Collins. Texas has a lot of bodies right now in that room with a lot of experience. And I think, again, there's anywhere you want to be experienced on the football field. It's one at quarterback, third-year starting quarterback. Offensive line, you got 4 to 5 guys returning. And two, the defensive line. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, Coach. What I mean, I think not only can it benefit Texas just because these guys have played a lot of football, but you know, Sark talks about kind of the versatility with the D line. Yeah, there you go. I remember that tweet from my man CJ at CJ Vogel underscore OTF does a great job there. But yeah, Coach, I think also on the edges. I mean, that's CJ's tweet about the interior D line and experience they're bringing. But I mean, Baron Sorrell's played a lot of football now for Texas. You're talking about a multiple year starter for them. Ethan Burke's a guy now that's got a season under his belt. You know, we bringing in Trey Moore. Trey Moore's played a lot of football, not here in Texas, but still played a lot of football. He's a seasoned veteran as well. I just think now on that, on those edges, it looks like, you know, and you got some new blood, Colton Bosick, you got your Colin Simmons on the edge. You got some new blood too. But hell, even Justin Fickley has played his, you know, a lot of football for Texas. What as a coach, what is that? What kind of advantage does that give Texas? Even though it may not, it may not be elite across the board physically, but you got guys who just play just so much football overall.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's a great opportunity for, you know, the coaches. You don't have to start from scratch with those guys. Yeah. They've been there. They know they know what's going on. So now you can really go in and really refine their game. Work on the feet, the hands, the hips, work on those small things because you don't, I mean, you know, you got to bring the young guys along, but I say we stick this in our hip pocket and at the end of the season, let's pull it out and go, okay, we were actually a top 5 defensive line room, you know, and I think top 10 is definitely reachable, possibly even top 5 because of the great point you and CJ made. There's so much experience there. You don't have the, you know, a big time name people are throwing around for end of the year awards, but it's a really solid room, one that I think that people better not take for granted because I think it's going to be really solid.
Yeah, Coach, I'm with you. And this comment from Ryan Nelson was interesting. You don't have a War Daddy. You don't have a Tavondre Sweat. You don't have a Byron Murphy. But I do think you're going to see more consistent play in the rotations as a result. You have 6 guys right now that you can shuffle in from the nose out to the 3, out to about a 4i or 5 that you feel really comfortable about, right? You know, you have Broughton and Collins returning. You have Aaron Bryan, who was probably your 5th rotational guy a year ago. And now you go out and you add 3 guys from the portal, all of which were starters, 2 of them at Arizona, which were a part of the top 15 rush defense, a top 25 defense in total. That's pretty good. I mean, it's hard to maintain that level of consistency across 80 snaps, especially when you're very heavy with your 1 and your 2 guys, like we saw a year ago. When those 2 guys weren't on the field, it's not like Texas's defense completely fell apart, but it certainly wasn't as dangerous as it was with them on the field. That's more to the point of them being war daddies, but yeah. to the point I'm trying to make, there will be more consistent play, I think. Probably a little lower of a ceiling as a result of losing those 2 guys, but you'll see not much of a drop off from a Lole to a Broughton to a Collins back to a Norton and Savea. So I think it's right now in a good shape as we head into the summer months.
I will say on this list from On3, Texas is listed in the best of the rest category, along with A&M, Miami, and Alabama and Virginia Tech. Oh, also probably should add this, Texas will play 2 of the 3 teams in the top three on this list in the best D lines in the country. They'll play Georgia and they play Michigan. So our O line will be tested this year too, ain't no doubt. But Texas is supposed to have one of the best O lines in the country. That will certainly be tested when they go up against Georgia. They go up against Michigan in the SEC. Period. That'll be just a step up in level of physicality. It is a line of scrimmage league. All right. Okay. What if I, CJ? I want to ask you about this because you're a recruiting guy. What if I told you Texas didn't have a top 10? They did not have top 10 facilities in college football. What if I told you that? Would that matter to you in recruiting? Would that affect?
I've seen the bubble. I know they're not top 10. I'll just put it bluntly. I mean, that thing's a little outdated. I'm sure it was real nice back in the day whenever it was first constructed. But you start seeing some of these programs, especially programs that don't have near as much capital or endowment or whatever as Texas, and you start seeing the indoor facilities that they are putting together, and you're thinking, all right, when is Texas going to catch up? And when is this going to get right? I know Texas, everything inside of Moncrief, they did that whole renovation. That looks great. You know, the locker rooms, the weight rooms. I think the weight room certainly looks a little bit better than what it did probably 15, 20 years ago. The locker room's probably up there in the conversation for one of the best in the country. But, nah, I mean, I think we're all waiting on Texas to catch up in the regards of the practice facility, the bubble, the indoor. That's coming, by the way. Yeah. I know they approved those plans not too long ago, but I'm not surprised by that at all, Rod.
Okay. Yeah. No, because there are some rankings out from 247 Sports about overall facilities in college football. They got the Aggies number 4. The Longhorns are ranked 11th on this list, ahead of the Sooners, who are 15th on the list. But I just wanted to get you – not because I've heard a coach – I heard an AD say, actually, and he was doing a like a radio show, and he said – you know, it's actually there are fewer boosters and donors, not willing, but at least motivated to donate to facilities in the NIL world because they'd rather just go, man, let's get the players. I mean, instead of getting the guy the TV in the locker, can we take care of that later after we start winning some games? Let's get the players. And that the boosters and the donors now, a lot of their mindset has shifted. And, you know, they actually have to really work on them to donate to build facilities because they want to get the players on the rosters with the NIL, and they want to use their money in that way. Does that surprise you that – because I know when you were coaching, man, the arms race of facilities, and this still is important, it was actually – I mean, that was some of the determining factors coaches thought in swinging a recruit was facilities. It still may be, but just – some of the boosters and the donors may have changed their minds about it.
Yeah, I think that's right. But I do. CJ makes a great point. When we get our indoor facility taken care of and updated and all that stuff, I've been with hundreds and hundreds of recruits and their parents coming through the facilities, and there's no complaining about so-and-so was better or this or that. I mean, it's just a beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I don't know about that list, but I can't see us not being in the top 10. But I think you make a great point, Rod. I don't think it matters. I mean, you know, I think the NIL and just the winning and the chance to be drafted and play for a guy like Sark and play in front of the Texas fans is – That's gonna make the difference. I don't think you remember we had I don't remember when we increased the stadium at what 2010 whenever that was.
Yeah,
they topped us by like 100 or something like that.
Yeah.
Or the big screen, you know, their big screen was like 2 feet bigger than ours, so they could say they have the you know what I mean. I don't think you don't hear about that stuff anymore.
You don't.
No, yeah. You don't hear about it. You hear about Bijan Mustard, and that's what you're hearing.
Exactly.
You're hearing about these cars these guys are driving.
Yeah, that's kind of the point. Because it's a great point. It used to be a lot of talk about the Godzillatron, and you know how big our television, you know, a screen is in our stadium, and that kind of stuff. And oh man, they got a barbershop in the stadium now, and they got TVs and a lot. And I remember that, and it was a lot of talk about it because programs wanted you to know about their upgrades and facilities. Now, like you said, Coach, they want you to know about Mustard, DJ Mustard. They want you to know about that pancake factory they got going on over there and how many, you know, nice cars in the parking lot. So I think the game has changed. Facilities are still important, just not as important as they used to be. It ain't that anymore.
It's funny. I'm sure he won't have too much of a problem with this, but maybe it was 2 years ago during the Texas Pro Day, I was, you know, kind of bumping into Ryan Watts, and I had known him a little bit previously. And, you know, he just wrapped up his first year at Texas, and, you know, he just walked into the bubble for the Pro Day, and we start talking a little bit, and I'm like, dang, man, that's hot in here. And he looks at me like, yeah, no duh, you know, because it gets pretty hot in there. There's all sorts of, you know, no circulation. You know, those fans don't do a whole lot. I asked him, I was like, yeah, whenever you picked Texas, did you envision this as the place you'd be practicing? And he kind of gives me a side eye, and he just goes, come on. But I, you know, today I think it's a great point. Now, it's tough to, you know, fundraise and put it towards a building when you can fundraise and put that towards players who will be playing in the building. You know, it just doesn't mean as much anymore. It doesn't mean anything, but, you know, at the time, you're right. There was probably a 3 or 4 year span where it was all about who's getting a nice locker room. We saw basically those unveilings, those hype videos, whatever, almost every other week with new schools, LSU, A&M, Texas. Northwestern tried to get into it too. I don't know if you've seen their practice facility, but it's right crazy. On the lake out there in Chicago, man, it's beautiful. But to the point, it's all about the NIL now. And Texas, luckily, because of Chris Del Conte and the efforts that he and his staff have done behind the scenes, have the money and the plans already set to build this new facility, which right now we've talked about it. When Texas has things rolling, how do you negatively recruit? I guess the bubble was probably the one I saw. with that gone now, I mean, what do you point to? You know,
seriously,
you don't have to take the little yellow school buses out to practice anymore. No, you can just walk across the street and go get practice on. I like it.
Yeah, I feel bad though, because back in my day, that was cutting edge technology, Coach. That was Texas on the cutting edge right there, that bubble back in my day. But now, trust me, I understand it's kind of an eyesore now. And I will say this, Mack Brown, even because you said, because they filled out the stadium, what they filled it in, what, 2010, right, finally, the stadium?
Do what?
Did you say
2000? Yeah, I think it was
somewhere around there.
It was, I think, the year we played for the national championship was the first year that it was enlarged. So I think it would have been 09, probably maybe 09.
Okay. And I'll say this, Mack Brown was selling that. He was selling that 99, Coach. He was selling that on the recruiting trail at 99. Oh yeah, we're gonna get a stadium done. And I think they was working on it. I just think it took them a little while to get it all done. But Mack Brown had the vision, man. He was selling that 99. They were gonna fill in the stadium, they were gonna fill in the horseshoe, all that kind of stuff. So Mack Brown knew. He knew. Oh, because he was probably the one trying to help fundraise most of that money. Number one on this. Oh, by the way, you said CJ about Northwestern. Number one, they were 13th on that list. Number one
list, Oregon. Coach, how's it going?
They say Oregon has the best.
I'm across the street. I'm on the on a call real quick. Are y'all still going?
I think CJ, don't say anything crazy. CJ, don't say anything crazy because we can hear you. I'm gonna text CJ that we can hear him. So don't say. There you go. I think he got off.
Oh, okay, I got.
Oh no, he's still on.
What's on the puzzle looking like the rest of the world?
I would say today we can hear you.
Don't want to hear him be talking about what she gonna charge an hour.
Yeah, don't say it, Coach. Exactly. Okay. Whatever you talk, don't get too comfortable, CJ. Please don't get too comfortable. Don't.
What time is that? Is that up at the game as well?
Oh no! Please, we can watch. Six we games? Might be watching CJ get canceled.
I'll make it up there for that.
Real time. Don't get canceled. Come on, CJ. Don't say anything crazy. All right. He got off the live stream. All right. We'll get back to it. But on the list. Please don't say anything crazy. Please don't say anything crazy. Because I texted him, but I don't know if he got the text. Okay. CJ, I'm so glad you didn't say anything crazy because we could hear you.
Oh, shoot. My bad.
Yeah. Your whole conversation. Dude, I was charged that much per hour. That was crazy.
Oh man,
I'm so glad you were not like on a conversation like a close friend or like somebody you like tell inside jokes with. So,
Oh, man, that could have gone so wrong. Oh, man, I'm sure we got to get Matt out here, man. Come on.
Oh, man. And you know what? It's a lesson, guys. I was always told this when I started working the radio. It's always a hot mic. It's always a hot mic, man. Anytime you're around it, if there's a screen on.
Yeah, ask Tom Herman about that.
Exactly. Oh man!
Yeah, double bird. Yeah, exactly.
Double bird. I'm sitting. Well,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for y'all having to listen in on that. No, that's my fault. But fine.
I just want you to say something crazy, and then you come back on, and people are like, CJ, you know what you said? And you're like,
No.
CJ's a nice guy. CJ would never say anything inappropriate or disrespectful or anything like that. But I'm just saying, like, hey, man, it could be just an inside joke that got misinterpreted. I don't know. I'm glad that CJ was all business on that call.
It was. It was, you know, Coach Johnson over here at Waco U. I was supposed to meet up with them earlier today. They moved practice from 4 to 3, so it went on a little bit earlier. That's why we're out here today. Their school is actually right behind me. It rained really heavily this morning, so he was calling to tell me to come Wednesday for their spring game. So I'll be back up here then for that. So, you know, that's a conversation. I'm glad y'all got to listen in, but at the same time, I'm sorry that y'all did. You know, that's on me.
No, I'm dude,
sure I was that won't happen again. That's on. I just got a little sweaty, man. That's not good at all.
Oh, I was scared for you. I was like, no, don't say anything crazy, CJ. Don't say anything crazy. All right, there you go. All right, anyway, that little look behind the curtain there with my man CJ Vogel. But there you go. The facilities. Like I said Oregon ended up having. I think they were ranked number one in facilities. Not to matter. I thought the conversation was more about NIL and how the conversation really the narrative has shifted about the arms race. It used to be about facility. The arms race is always represented by something new. And now it's NIL is what the arms race is represented by and who's winning that arms race. So, all right, this stuff there. All right, before we, because I know we're wrapping, getting close to the end here, we got to thank our wonderful sponsor one more time because we're really excited about having our friends Allegiant on board. So if you are a business owner who struggles with the following, finding new customers, consistent leads, and finding marketing services to promote your business that actually work, founder and CEO Chad Markham with Allegiant Digital Marketing, an Austin-based advertising agency, has helped thousands of business owners just like you for over 25 years conquer these same challenges, folks. So if you are ready to start making money in your business and growing with confidence, you need to visit Allegiant Digital, allegiantdigital.com/ontexasfootball. That's allegiantdigital.com/texasfootball and get a free marketing plan. Plus, you can save up to $2,500 in advertising with their Hook'em Horns special today. That's allegiantdigital.com/ontexasfootball. So thank you to founder and CEO Chad Markham. If you're looking for business solutions, all right, to your problems in the business world, my man, CEO Chad Markham of Allegiant Digital might be the phone call you need to make or might be the place you need to visit. Go to allegiantdigital.com/ontexasfootball. All right, thank you for their support. We appreciate it.
Phone call in private, I'll tell you that.
CJ learning lessons today, man, on the show. I think we all are. Well, I'm just thankful. And my man CJ, that he's just a gentleman. CJ's a gentleman. That's all it is. I shouldn't even been stressing about it. But if I've been in that situation, the likelihood is Robbie gonna say something crazy and then get misinterpreted, and then I probably get canceled. But nobody wants that. We don't want that. All right.
Rod, I'll tell you what. That's my worst fear is having to say an apology as Nick Castellanos hits a deep fly ball to left center field. You know that. That's not what you want at all.
You don't have to do that, man. I don't want you in that position either, CJ. I don't want that at all. All right. You know what? Before we get back to the topics here, CJ, I know because you just kind of dropped a little nugget there that you obviously plan on going to visit and get your eyes on some recruits. This weekend, I know you were going back and forth, went to go visit your people, had a great Mother's Day, but I know that in between then going and coming back, you were trying to get your eyes on some recruits and make some stops. Can you get folks some nuggets out there about what you may have seen?
Yeah, definitely. We talked about it a little bit last Thursday, but able to see Jaquan Snell, the 2027 out of Loxahatchee. He'll be a wide receiver at the next level. Jeff Banks and Pete Kwiatkowski stopped by Loxahatchee on Wednesday. So the day before I was up there, they got to look at him. Texas offered April 18th, was on campus around then, spring game. Really, really talented kid. Big time upside, top 10 potential kid in the state. High on Texas at the moment, but we'll see, a long way to go. And, of course, Riley Pettijohn, the linebacker out of McKinney. Saw his spring game on Friday. I tell you what, 6'2", 215, 220, that 10-7 shows up. And he's a heck of an athlete. I mentioned it last night on the Longhorn live stream. But whenever you have Elijah Bo Barnes on campus with the other fellow linebackers pushing for him to commit on the spot that day, you're in a good spot with two really talented DFW linebackers. And I think Texas is in that spot to beat right now, the kind of the pole position leader. But Texas in a really good spot for Riley Pettijohn. USC, Ohio State, the only other official visits locked in. Florida State, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, still trying to buy their way in, see if that door is open. But I think Texas is looking really, really good for one of the state's best linebackers at the moment. Of course, y'all just heard the conversation, but Wednesday I'll be back up at Waco University. A number of 26 and 27 guys. Devontre Kirkland was at Texas in January, back again in April. Really talented defensive back. London Smith is probably the best 2026 linebacker and wide receiver in the state of Texas. And, of course, their quarterback's got some game to him as well, Savoy Nichols. So I'll be up there Wednesday night to see all of them in action. And hopefully have some updates Thursday afternoon for all of you guys on the winning drive.
Appreciate that, CJ. Yeah, man, CJ's working. Like I said, he's pulling double duties, multitasking behind the scenes. That's why we love him, and CJ's always dedicated. All right, I got to get you guys' thoughts about a couple of other topics here. Actually, we got a question here from Justin that I want to address before we do that. Which incoming transfer do you project will have the biggest impact? It's a good question, Justin. Thank you for that. Coach, I'll throw it to you first. Which incoming transfer do you project will have the biggest impact? That is good. I got mine. I think I got it.
Wow. I'm going to have to think about that.
I'll give you mine real quick.
That's a good question. Yeah. That's a really good question.
I think I got mine. I'll give you mine real quick. I think it's going to be Trey Moore.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. I think it's going to be Trey Moore just because Texas hasn't had an edge room like this in a while. If Texas has the same formula that Sark has had his first 3 years here, which is Sark's offenses go on runs. They're almost like it's like a basketball team, almost like the Golden State Warriors in their prime. Texas was going to go on a run at one point in the game. Now, sometimes the whole game feels like a run. Like when they played Texas Tech this past year or Oklahoma State. But most of the time, Texas has these runs, and it usually lasts about 10 minutes of a game, and the opponent, you cannot keep up during that 10 minutes. Now, sometimes it's early, like in some games when it's in the first half, and they get up by 20, 21 points, and then they have to hold on to win the game. Hell, like in that – think about that Rice game. They didn't get it to the end of the game. Was it the Rice game? No, Wyoming game. Wyoming game, right? Yep. Wyoming. The Wyoming game, it didn't come to the end, right? That's when you get your run. It came at the end of the game. I think that's kind of what Sark's offenses, kind of how they've been built. They go on these really runs, and then they just separate from their opponents. And I think if that is the case and they go on these runs early, what they've been missing is really the ability to force negative plays and to get sacks and tackles for loss when they know their opponent is in a predictable passing situations. They've abandoned the run. Not only abandoned, they took it out in the backyard, shot it, and buried it. They're just dropping back every damn play, coach. And yet Texas can't make plays on the football in the secondary, and they can't get home up front. And they had the best D-tackle duo in the country trying to do it, and they still couldn't really get home. You know they were double-teaming those guys consistently. So the hope is that this year, since you're deep on the edges, when you're in those situations, that now you'll be able to get home. And you'll be able to get home with a little bit of tighter coverage and some guys who got some better BGO and bend and can come off that edge and wreak havoc on the QB. And you're deep there. That is the hope. That's the theory. We don't know if it's going to work. But that the strangest thing about last year's teams – for Texas, last year's team, I should say, was that they would get up in games and then somehow the opponent, while being one-dimensional, would be able to come back and make it interesting when honestly, and I think this year it will be different. I think this year Texas holds on to that lead and then not only holds on, they can build on it or even maintain it. that would be the hope this season.
All about creating that separation and holding on to whatever lead you have, Rod. I look at it, that defensive end room, we've talked about it being a step up from what we saw a year ago. But if you can go back and look at three specific plays that helped Texas win its biggest games of the season. Two of them were against Alabama. It was the blitz by David Benda in which he got cut, got up, and sacked Jalen Milroe. And then there's the other one where it was Anthony Hill coming off the edge on third and long that allowed Texas to get pressure, get the sack, of course, force a punt, and then run off 7 straight minutes of clock and end the game. And then you look at Ethan Burke and what he did off the edge on Kansas State's own goal line at home. You know, that was a close game. A backup quarterback started for Texas against a top 25 opponent. You needed big-time players to make big-time plays. That forced fumble on the goal line allowed for a walk-in touchdown the very next play. Texas wins by 3 points in overtime. I mean, the more of those plays that you can create, the easier it is to win football games. And right now, Texas didn't have as many as you would have expected a 12-2 team to have had a year ago. And that's, in a way, encouraging because you're looking at a room that should be able to create more plays, to get more pressure on the quarterback, to make things much more difficult in passing situations where, again, we saw teams really eat up at Texas's defense, really the only way that they were able to a year ago, now not going to be as easy. So I like that factor about this group. I like Trey Moore as that impact guy. If it's not Isaiah Bond or Matthew Golden, that's exactly where I'm going with my guy as well, Trey Moore.
Well, you know I got to stay in that wide receiver room. I mean, we got the Oldens. We got the Bolden and the Golden. But I got to go with the most obvious choice out there, Isaiah Bond, making the biggest impact. It's easier for a receiver to make a big impact. I mean, a receiver can catch one game-winning pass. You can say, oh, yeah, that's a biggest difference in our team, whatever, you know. But I think, you know, I don't want to sell Golden or Silas Bolden short because both of those two guys had the potential. But just going with the history, I'm going to go with Isaiah Bond.
If he ends up being Quinn's go-to guy, and Sark has a tendency to force feed whoever the go-to guy is. We know from watching Xavier Worthy, if he believes in you, Sark's going to force feed you the football. I could see that him easily being that guy. But then we don't know. It could be Matthew Golden who ends up being, in terms of not go-to guy in how much, or at least the amount of targets, but go-to guy on third downs, money downs, maybe in red zone, critical situations go-to guy. Could have both in that, and I think Texas had both last year, right? Xavier Worthy got a ton of usage funneled to him over and over throughout the game, but on some of those money downs, third down or in the red zone, that's when we saw Quinn look to A.D. Mitchell or look to J.T. Sanders. So you could have some of that variety within that group as well.
And here's one more thing to consider too. I haven't gone back and done this, but it'd be interesting to go back and look at the quarterbacks that our wide receiver transfers had. You're kind of considering all three of them had the same type quarterback. You know, it could have been, we may see Silas or Matthew really blow it up this year.
That's true.
With a Heisman type quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, that may not have had a guy that had the time from the pass protection or the ability to get him the ball the way that Quinn Ewers can. So, you know, there's a lot of unknowns there in those
that's
guys.
That's a great point, Coach.
UT boy, to answer your question, Silas gets here the first day of June. They'll begin right around June 3rd, I believe, for offseason conditioning. So I guess that last weekend of May is when you'll see him move onto campus, and they'll see a lot of that team, a lot of those guys get back to campus right around then. And RW, did Bond have many drops at Alabama? Not too many to be a big concern, but significantly more than A.D. Mitchell's one, I'll say that. And again, that's my biggest concern about Isaiah Bond right now is, will he be able to make the contested catches? Will he be able to be that sure-handed guy that we expect out of a number one option? I didn't leave that spring game with all that much confidence that he could be, but I'd love to be proven wrong. At least Texas is going to have a number of big-time options to deploy at that wide receiver spot to make up sure, to be sure that you don't have any laps in holes on that roster.
All right, last topic here, gentlemen, before we call it a day here. Bill Connolly has his latest returning production rankings out. for the college football season, the upcoming college football season. Now, he admits this is just mid-May, and he does a lot of returning production. So he admits that it's still a work in progress, but this is where he stands mid-May. He always updates it as much as he can. He's got the Longhorns 36th on this list, 67% returning production for the Longhorns. He's got, hell, he's actually got the Iowa State Cyclones at the top of this list with 86%. But yeah, he's got the Longhorns at 67% returning production overall. And I think they got the returning production at the key spots. Oklahoma's at 65%. And see, this is great breakdown. So Oklahoma's at 65% returning production. Texas at 67%. Texas 36th. Oklahoma's at 53rd. So, but it's not, obviously, that's not a huge gap between them in terms of their percentage wise. But look at where that returning production is coming from, right, CJ? Starting quarterback gone. A starting offensive lineman gone. For Texas, you return, you know, four of your five starting offensive linemen. You return your starting quarterback. Now you lose a lot of receivers. You lose a lot of targets. You lose a lot of rushes with Jay Brooks. So that's also important. I don't want to act like it's not. But I feel like if you could choose between bringing back your starting quarterback, your starting offensive line, or all your skill talent, which basically Texas all lost, running back, tight end, three wide receivers in the draft. Coach, which would you choose?
I'll choose what we got.
Yeah, he's like, that's easy.
I mean, Rice is returning 81% of their production, and nobody's too concerned about Rice being in the college playoffs.
Agreed. I'm trying to see where the Aggies are on him. I'm looking for the Aggies. Give me a second. I'll find the Aggies for you. Oh, yeah. The Aggies are actually right the same as Texas. They're 67%. They're 38th on the list. Texas 36. Aggies are 60. They're 38th. 67%. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting because I just think Texas is returning production at the key spots. Now, on defense, I'll admit, losing Devondre Sweat, losing Byron Murphy. All right, CJ, that's concerning in terms of losing that production on defensive side. But offensively, I think Texas is returning pieces at all the critical spots.
I would love to see this list of the top 20 production teams that produced the most yardage in 2023 overall offensive yardage, and let's rank that.
Because he does that too. He does something like that too. I'll find that for you, Coach.
Yeah, like I said,
yeah.
Rice returned 81% of their production. Well, shoot, they may have had 1,500 yards of total offense last year. Who knows? I don't know. So this doesn't. You got to take all this with a grain of salt because then they suck. I've told people, we sucked last year on offense. Maybe a team I've coached in the past. But Coach, you got them all coming back. Yeah, I know they sucked last year.
I don't want to see now. You sound like Dylan, Coach.
All those suckers are coming back, and we had 1,000 yards offense the whole season. They're all coming back.
See now you understand what Dylan was coming from, Coach. You wish you had that transfer portal.
That's right.
I can exchange them all, turn them all. Yeah, Georgia here. Georgia's at 28th, and Georgia's at 68%. So you know, Texas right there. I think where they need to be in terms of returning production. Like you said, Coach, you take it with a grain of salt, of course. All right. Any last words for the people before we get out of here? I know CJ has to head on over to a practice. Any last words for the people, CJ?
No, all set here. Thanks for tuning in today. Of course, Coach is on the road today as well. Most of them down here in Houston. AJ Milby going out to see Dia Bell throw this week as well. So we'll keep you all updated on OnTexasFootball.com. Come be an OTFOG, $39.95. Mm-hmm. For the full year, you can come join us and get all the updates over there. And thank you again for joining us. Over 45,000 subscribers now on Texas Football here at the YouTube channel. And for another edition of the Winning Drive, thank you again for spending your Monday afternoon with us.
That's right. Hey, Coach, any words for the people?
Hey, man, I got me a good list going of legacy family football players. I it's going to be a great list.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
And just to clear it up, the Shipleys ain't in the top 10.
Oh, get out of here, man. Get out. Well, look, no, we're going to have a draft then. That means mini draft.
Well, you know, Earl Campbell had a couple of brothers that played at Texas, too.
Yes, he did. That is
arguably the greatest player to ever play at Texas.
That's true.
He's the greatest I ever saw. Well, he's the greatest running back I ever saw, period. I mean, to me, he may be the best all around, the best player I've ever seen play at University of Texas. And he had two brothers that were pretty stinking good too. So that's just, do your homework. You'll be surprised. You got Ted Coy, Ernie Senior, Ernie Junior. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's some good ones out there.
No, I said, Coach, sounds like you cooking up a mini draft idea, drafting the all-time greatest family legacies in Texas sports history.
I already told you my first pick.
Hey, and by the way, we can do all sports because baseball's got some good ones over there happening too.
Yeah, I didn't think about baseball.
Yeah, we can go all sports now if you want to. We can lay it out and have some fun next time. We might do that. All right, there you go. Thank you, Coach. We appreciate the time and the wisdom. Thank you, CJ. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for all you guys for joining us. Also, I want to thank our fabulous sponsor once again, too, Allegiant Digital. Really thank you to Chad Markham. Really happy to have them on board. Thank you to all you guys out there for listening. Thank you for watching. We appreciate it so much. Until next time, hook 'em.